This is Audible.
The Luminaries by Eleanor Catton. Exalted in Aries, in which the defendant waxes philosophical. Mr. Moody gains the upper hand. Lauderback gives a recitation, and the Carvers are caught in a lie. The afternoon sessions began promptly at 1 o'clock.
"Mr. Staines," said the justice, after the boy had been sworn in, "you have been indicted for 3 charges. Firstly, the falsification of the January 1866 quarterly report. How do you plead?"
"Guilty, sir."
"Secondly, the embezzlement of ore lawfully submitted by your employee, Mr. John Longquee, against the gold mine Aurora, since discovered in the dwelling belonging to the late Mr. Crosby Wells of the Arahura Valley. How do you plead?"
"Guilty, sir."
"And lastly, dereliction of duty to claims and mines requiring daily upkeep, the period of your absence being in excess of 8 weeks. How do you plead?"
"Guilty, sir."
"Guilty all around," said the justice, sitting back. "All right, you can be seated for the moment, Mr. Staines. We have Mr. Moody for the defendant again, and Mr. Broom for the plaintiff, assisted by Mr. Fellows and Mr. Harrington of the Magistrates' Court. Mr. Broom, your statement, please."
As before, Broom's statement was one designed to discredit the defendant, and as before, it was excessively long-winded. He itemized all the trouble that had been caused by Staines' absence, casting Wells' widow in particular as a tragic figure whose hopes had been falsely raised by the promise of a windfall inheritance that she had mistakenly but reasonably supposed to be a part of her late husband's estate. He spoke of the inherent corruption of wealth, and referred to both fraud and embezzlement as "those clear-sighted, cold-blooded crimes." Moody's statement, when he gave it, asserted simply that Staines was very aware of the trouble he had caused by his extended absence, and very willing to pay for all damages or debts incurred as a result.
"Mr. Broom," said Justice Kemp, when he was done, "your witness."
Broom rose.
"Mr. Staines."
He held up a piece of paper in the manner of one brandishing a warrant for arrest, and said,
"I have here a document submitted by Nielsen and Co., Commission Merchants, which inventories the estate of the late Mr. Crosby Wells. The estate, as recorded by Mr. Nielsen, includes a great deal of pure ore, since valued by the bank at £4,096 exactly. What can you tell me about this bonanza?"
Staines answered without hesitation.
"The ore was found upon the claim known as the Aurora," he said, "which, until recently, belonged to me. It was excavated by my employee, Mr. Quee, in the middle months of last year. Mr. Quee retorted the metal into squares, as was his personal custom, and then submitted these squares to me as legal earnings. When I received the bonanza, I did not bank it against the Aurora, as I was legally obliged to do. Instead, I bagged it up, took it to the Arahura Valley, and buried it."
He spoke calmly and without conceit.
"Why the Arahura, specifically?"
said Broom.
"Because you can't prospect on Maori land, and most of the Arahura belongs to the Maoris," said Staines. "I thought it would be safest there, at least for the while, until I came back and dug it up again."
"What did you intend to do with the bonanza?"
"I planned to cut it down the middle," said Staines, "and keep half of it for myself. The other half I meant to give to Miss Wetherill as a gift."
"Why should you wish to do such a thing?"
He looked puzzled.
"I'm afraid I don't understand the question, sir."
"What did you mean to achieve, Mr. Staines, by presenting Miss Wetherill with this sum of money?"
"Nothing at all," said the boy.
"You meant to achieve nothing at all?"
"Yes, exactly," said Staines, brightening a little. "It wouldn't be a gift otherwise, would it?"
"That fortune," said Broom,
raising his voice above the scattered laughter,
"was later discovered in the cottage belonging to the late Crosby Wells. How did this relocation come about?"
"I don't know for sure. I expect that he dug it up and took it for himself."
"If that was indeed the case, why do you suppose that Mr. Wells did not take it to the bank?"
Isn't it obvious? Said Staines.
I'm afraid it isn't, said Broom.
Because the ore was smelted, of course, said Staines, and each one of those blocks bore the word Aurora engraved into the very metal by my Mr. Quee. He could hardly pretend he'd lifted it from the ground.
Why did you not bank the Bonanza against the Aurora as you were legally obliged?
50% shares on the Aurora belong to Mr. Francis Carver, said Staines. I have a poor opinion of the man, and I did not want to see him profit.
Broom frowned. You removed the Bonanza from the Aurora because you did not want to pay the 50% dividends legally owing to Mr. Carver. However, you intended to give 50% of this same Bonanza to Miss Anna Wetherill. Is that right?
Exactly right.
You will forgive me if I consider your intentions somewhat illogical, Mr. Staines.
What's illogical about it? Said the boy. I wanted Anna to have Carver's share.
For what reason?
Because she deserved to have it, and he deserved to lose it, said Emery Staines.
More laughter, more widespread this time. Moody was becoming anxious. He had warned Staines against speaking too fancifully or too pertly. When it was quiet again, the justice said, I do not believe that it is your prerogative, Mr. Staines, to adjudicate what a person does or does not deserve. You will kindly restrict yourself in the future to factual statements only. Staines sobered at once.
I understand, sir, he said.
The justice nodded. Continue, Mr. Broom.